at 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. It was all Granite Staters were talking about yesterday afternoon. The news that two bombs had gone off at the Boston Marathon, right at the finish line at almost 3 o'clock. The twin explosions made a nightmare out of a day that's normally a celebration Bostonians look forward to every year. A race that attracts more than 27,000 runners from all over the world and nearly 500,000 spectators who turn out to cheer them on. So far, 3 people have died and more than 100 were injured, some quite seriously. Police, security officials, and the FBI are scouring the Back Bay section of Boston for clues. Meanwhile, President Obama said we will get to the bottom of this and that any responsible individuals, any responsible groups will feel the full weight of justice. Today in The Exchange, we'll hear Granite State reaction and bring you any new information we have. So let's hear from you. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And we begin the hour with Steve Brown. He's a reporter and host for WBUR Boston, who was covering the scene there yesterday. And Steve Brown, crazy times for you. We really appreciate you taking a few minutes for us this morning.
That's quite all right, Laura.
What was it like there trying to cover the scene, Steve?
It was, after the Boston Marathon, it's always a crazy scene. You get thousands of runners coming in through Kenmore Square down to Boylston Street. It's always chaotic. They plan for it ahead of time. It's one of the largest triage events in New England because they know they anticipate these injuries. So there were a lot of medical personnel down at the finish line yesterday, and that may have helped some of the victims. Again, you throw in these explosions, and the chaos was increased tenfold down there. Runners not knowing exactly where to go. I was caught up. At one point, they stopped the race just out near Kenmore Square, about a half mile from the finish line, until they figured out what they were going to do with all these runners.
Right, because there were still a number of people who hadn't finished yet, right?
That's right. They were still coming in. Obviously, you see on TV earlier in the day, the elite runners, they finish with those 2-hour and 9-minute times. A lot of, thousands and thousands of other runners who run a little bit slower pace, maybe 4 or 5 hours. This race is really all about them. That's how it started. And so those people were still coming in. They held up those runners at Mass Ave till they figured out what to do. They decided instead of sending them down into Boylston Street, because that was an active crime scene, they would send them down Commonwealth Ave, right down the middle of Commonwealth Avenue. If you're familiar with Commonwealth Avenue in Boston, it's a tree-lined street. There's a mall, trees down the middle. All the runners were just kind of walking and along with the general public down the middle of the mall yesterday until they got down to Berkeley Street, where they were able to be reunited with their friends and relatives and also get their bags with all their belongings.
Yeah, we've heard stories this morning about, people trying to find family and friends and just craziness. What are you hearing this morning, Steve, from Boston Police?
Okay, most everything now is coming through the FBI, and we've heard nothing officially yet. We're anticipating another briefing in about 20 minutes from authorities. What we know is that the FBI is leading this investigation. Local and state police are also active with it, along with many other bureaus, DEA, the ATF, many law enforcement in the area. The National Guard is assisting. It's very eerie to see military Humvees driving around the streets of Back Bay, as
yeah,
I did this morning.
Absolutely. So 9:30, and of course, if anything comes breaking out of that, we'll bring it to you. Any update, Steve, on the death toll? So far, 3 people, but as I understand, some injuries were quite serious, so that unfortunately raises the possibility of more deaths.
Yeah, the numbers are changing. The injuries kind of ticking up a little bit. We're up to 166 injuries total, 17 critical, 41 serious. Again, as you mentioned, three people killed. We've learned that one of those is an 8-year-old boy named Martin Richard of Dorchester. He's among the dead. His mother and his sister also seriously injured. Apparently, they were down at the finish line to cheer on the father of the Richard family, who was running the race, to down at the finish line, and that's when the explosions took place. No word on the identities yet of the other two fatalities.
Yeah, I was wondering about that. Stephen, I know you're real busy. You got that briefing coming up. Final thoughts from you on this?
It's just an incredibly eerie situation. People just somewhat maudlin after what happened. I happened to be dispatched down to Newtown, Connecticut, right after the shootings back in December. And that same feeling of disbelief, that a sense that something has changed that is going to change everything to a community. And, you know, I've covered the Boston Marathon a number of times, and no one will ever look at this race the same. No one will look at the city the same after what happened yesterday.
Yeah, and hats off, Steve, please, to everyone at WBUR in a very difficult situation. People there clearly rattled and upset, and I did listen to your coverage last night. Everybody there gave us the information we needed, and we here really appreciate it. So thank you and good luck.
Thank you, Laura. Have a great day.
All right, take care. Steve Brown, reporter and host for WBUR, who was covering the scene in Boston yesterday. And today in the Exchange, we're getting Granite State reaction to this. And let's hear from you, your comments, thoughts, your stories, if you were at the race yesterday, either as a spectator or a runner. The number here in the Exchange, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. With me in studio is Cesar Rebellon. He's a criminologist and associate professor of sociology at UNH. He teaches a course on terrorism. He was in class yesterday when news of these bombings began to emerge. And Cesar, thank you very much for being with us. We really appreciate it. Coming in at the last minute.
Glad to be here.
Keith Shields is also here, executive producer for NHPR's Exchange. And he was running his 16th Boston Marathon yesterday, finishing about 90 minutes before the bomb blasts. And Keith, let me just speak for everyone here at NHPR. Glad you made it.
Thank you very much, Laura.
Yeah. And your experience yesterday, Keith, just tell us how you experienced this tragedy.
Well, I, as you said, I finished about an hour and a half before the bomb blast, and it takes a long while to kind of finish, go from the finish line to being able to leave the city. You have to go get your refreshments. You have to kind of meet with medical people. You have to get your medal. You have to get your bags, and that takes a long time. And then you finally go and find your loved ones, and then you try to get out of the city. So I probably got out of the city about 45 minutes after finishing. I got home. I was in the shower. I got a phone call from a friend saying, you know, are you okay? And you should check the news. And then the rest of the day, pretty much for me, was searching for the tons of friends from Boston and New Hampshire that I had who were running the race and making sure that everyone was okay.
Yeah, lots of New Hampshire people running this race.
A lot.
And spectators coming down there and so forth.
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah, and Cesar, I want to bring you into this, but Keith, just a couple more questions for you. So the timing of this is important. As I said, you finished 90 minutes before the bomb blasts. Who were the people most affected by this?
Well, they were generally people who would run the marathon in about 4 hours. You know, Steve had said, you know, the slower runners, I mean, in my book, it's the heart and soul of the race. You know, they have three starts because of the amount of people who start the race and how small the streets are at the beginning of the starting line. And so it's the third wave. It's the wave of the slower runners, the charity runners, the invitationals, many people running the race for the first time. And by the time that they leave, you know, it's probably about 4 hours after they left. So these are the people that, you know, people stick around to watch. The people who, you know, have run, they're nervous at the starting line. They're really questioning themselves at the hills, and they push forward. And, you know, and these struggling through the finish line and, you know, are motivated by the cheers and just the wonderful energy that happens in Boston. A lot of my friends were actually finishing right at that time. One person actually was at the finish line. One was just crossing the finish line. One was right about a quarter mile away and was stopped probably about a quarter mile before the finish.
Wow. So you heard on Facebook and through the phone and everything from friends
yesterday.
Right.
A lot of my friends were very close to what happened when the blast happened. We're very close to it at that time.
And you mentioned, Keith, you know, these tend to be the people who maybe are running for the first time. Mm-hmm. You know, I love the way you put it, the heart and soul of the marathon. I mean, just remind us, what a big deal this is for folks, not just more elite runners like yourself, but people who are just really getting into this sport?
Well, it is for everybody. It's for the fans, too. It's for all those spectators who are out there. You know, the Boston Marathon is what people call the most prestigious race out there. It's because of its history. It's because of, one of the only marathons that you actually have to qualify to get into. If anyone who's a runner or a marathon, that is their aspiration. That is their kind of mecca, to make it to the Boston Marathon. And so it's all that hard work. You show up, and that day's a celebration for you. You celebrated a lot of hard work getting to the starting line, bragging rights that you are a Boston Marathon finisher. It is just before I was a runner, it was a place that I went to every year. Anyone who's a sports enthusiast, who's an enthusiast of life, who it goes there and looks forward to Patriots Day every year so they can go down and either cheer loved ones or just cheer strangers.
Yeah, Massachusetts has a day off.
It does. It's a holiday. It's a city holiday.
And, Caesar, talking about the day itself, that's gotten a lot of attention, hasn't it? That this time of sort of mid to late May is a time for anti-government groups to step up their activity. We've seen Oklahoma City, we've seen Waco, we've seen Columbine. I mean, all this sort of weird, bad stuff often happens this particular week.
That's definitely true. But one of the things that I would suggest, and one of the things that we actually talked about in class, I should mention that one of my students actually saw this new story breaking and brought it to my attention. We talked a little bit about it. And related to the points that you're making, one of the things that we discussed in class was the need, I think, to take a little bit of a step back and not jump to any particular conclusions. In certainly this age of what I would call fast communication, when you've got people on Facebook, you've got people on Twitter, you've got all these social media with which we communicate so quickly, it's very easy for a game of quote-unquote telephone to sort of take hold and for people to get information that sometimes is not completely accurate. So we talked about that a little bit in class in real time as we were kind of checking out websites to see what was taking place. And one of the things that I certainly found later in the day was that, in fact, there were some pieces of information that did come out that weren't exactly as was first advertised. So, for example, there were some conflicting reports early on about the JFK library. There were some reports early on about whether we had a suspect and so forth. And some of these things were a little bit more complicated and nuanced than was initially reported.
Right. We'll follow up on that after a short break for sure, and take your questions and comments and just thoughts and feelings about this at 1-800-892-6477. We'll be right back.
This is NHPR 919. Good morning. Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from FCI Federal, dedicated people working together to accomplish rewarding outcomes. That is the hallmark of FCI Federal. More information online at fcifederal.com. From the Monshire Museum of Science in Norwich, Vermont, presenting How People Make Things, an exhibit inspired by Mr. Rogers' factory tours, open daily 10 to 5, monshire.org. And the stroke program at Catholic Medical Center, a comprehensive stroke program dedicated to improving recovery rates for stroke patients. Information at CatholicMedicalCenter.org. More in New Hampshire reaction to the Boston Marathon bombings on the Exchange. At 10 o'clock, we join WBUR in Boston for On Point with more on the aftermath of the explosions in Boston. Mostly cloudy, a chance of a shower today from the White Mountains to the Canadian border, a high 55 there. Partly sunny for the rest of the state, high 60 to 65. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're getting Granite State reaction to yesterday's Boston Marathon bombings. We're talking with Granite Staters who were there yesterday. We're looking at this as a case of terrorism and some of the thoughts around that. And we want your stories. If you were at the race yesterday, if you were watching it on TV, if you know somebody who ran, we want to hear from you this hour. Also, just your thoughts on this stunning development in Boston. 1-800-892-6477 is the number for you to join us on The Exchange. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. You can post a comment on our Facebook page. With us in studio, Keith Shields, executive producer for The Exchange. He was running his 16th Boston Marathon yesterday, finishing about an hour and a half before the bomb blasts. Also with us, Caesar Rebellion, criminologist and associate professor of sociology at UNH. He teaches a course on terrorism. In fact, he was in that class yesterday when this news broke. And Caesar, just before the break, you were saying, look, in this era of, Twitter and Facebook and everything's instant, it's especially important not to jump to conclusions. Go ahead.
Absolutely. So there's certainly going to be a desire to understand who this was and what they were about, what they were trying to achieve, and so forth. Certainly there's going to be a desire to bring this person or group to justice, and that's all understandable. At the same time, one of the things that we need to be a little bit careful about is, again, jumping to conclusions about whether this was something that reflected a domestic act purely, whether this was international, what the background of these individuals was or was not. And again, you've seen a lot of discussion already in the first, 24 hours or so about whether it was this, whether it was that. So we need to just kind of sometimes put the brakes on a little bit and be sure that we don't spread, information that isn't completely correct.
Sure, and I appreciate that. Why is this so important to people, though, Caesar? You know, this conversation about is it domestic, is it foreign?
Well, that's a good question. There's probably a number of different answers to that. One thing I guess I would suggest is that in some sense, when something like this happens and we see such an understandably strong reaction from the public, in some sense that actually speaks, at least to my mind, to the fact that in the United States, we actually don't have, over the past several decades, the types of problems with terrorism that a lot of other countries do have on a day-to-day, year-to-year basis. So I think in some sense, when people see something like this and it's something that they're not used to, fortunately, they definitely do get fearful, understandably, and concerned about their own well-being, about their families, and so forth. So people naturally are going to want to have some sense of, all right, who is this? What is the threat that we're facing? So that they know what they should do, what they, how they should go about handling themselves in a potentially threatening situation. So it's understandable. People are scared, and therefore they want to have some sense of, who it was. And that might lead to some speculation about, well, because of this time of year, as you were saying before, maybe it has something to do with, there was certainly speculation about this being tax day. And, maybe that has some implications for, who this might have been. And it may, but we, again, don't know that as yet. It may or may not be a situation involving purely domestic terror. It may or may not be a situation that involves some element of international terror. So I think in answer to your question, why is it that people are so concerned? Why is this important? Well, it's something that obviously comes up because people are fearful and, again, understandably so.
And it's that human desire for a why.
Absolutely.
Even though
Absolutely.
Often there isn't a good why. You know, Keith, you said you spent a lot of the day yesterday after you finished the race just on social media hearing from people. I mean, give us a sense of just the sort of mad speculation about what was possibly behind this.
Well, right. It's the pluses and the minuses of social media. I mean, the pluses is that, you can communicate so much quicker across the country. I mean, from really across the world, I was getting messages from friends and people kind of or just saying Keith is OK. I heard from him. So-and-so is OK. I heard from that person. But, you also get those people who kind of come quick to politicizing. A few people, wondering how my welfare was, kind of started going there. And it's, I think for most people it was just kind of too early, I mean, it's right now, it's about that people are okay. But I think, as Caesar said, it's like, why? I always say that the Boston Marathon is where you see the best in people. It is a celebration of, it's a celebration. It's really what it is. And, it's actually a very non-political event. In fact, I've run where people have their political signs and they'll get, lambasted over people, saying, keep your politics out of my race.
Purity to it.
Yeah, people hardly ever wear political shirts. They wear, they represent their country or their town, or they put their name on it or in memory of so-and-so. So it's really such a non-political event. And, for me, the sadness and the anger is sort of like, why did someone, not that there's better places, but why the Boston Marathon?
Yeah, it's the best of the best,
such
really.
A wonderful day.
Yeah. And we'll talk maybe later on about thoughts about next year, but we won't go there quite yet. I want to also invite you to join us if you have thoughts or questions or comments on this. The number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. We're following up on those Boston Marathon bombings yesterday, getting reaction from the Granite State. And let's get your thoughts. 1-800-892-6477. And Caesar and Keith, I want to bring another voice into our conversation. With us now is Matt Fowler. He's a Northwood, New Hampshire resident. He was about 40 yards from the scene of the first explosion. Matt works for AMI Graphics, which supplies all of the signage for the marathon. And boy, Matt, thanks a lot for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
Sure, you're welcome.
So what did you see yesterday?
Yesterday, we were just watching the runners come through the finish line. It started to thin out just a little bit. And in one of the videos, you can see the lady pushing a wheelchair. And that lady had just passed me. And then the explosion went off. I think she made it past the finish line prior to that. But just lots of smoke, lots of bewildered faces. People didn't know what was going on. I heard somebody yell out, it was just a transformer. then the second one went off, and that's when people really started to get nervous. People started kind of rushing down the grandstands and running to the street. For the most part, people did really, really well. Boston really pulled through and stayed calm, trying to get out of there in a timely fashion. I was trying to help people down the grandstands, so my back kind of was toward where a lot of the action was. Once the grandstand was clear, I looked over and we saw the Marines, I think it was the Marines or the police, pulling the barricades from the other side. I wasn't much help after that, so I kind of started walking up the street along with everybody else and moved to the next block over. Still saw some runners coming down the street wondering where the finish line was. I think after 26 miles, they didn't quite know what was going on. They weren't obviously expecting something like this. They just didn't know what to do.
Sure.
So that was, I think the runners had a really tough time figuring out what was going on. And then a lot of the runners didn't speak English. You know, you have people from all over the world coming here, and Boston's kind of a tough place to get around. So if you can't speak English, it's even harder. So there were a lot of people trying to figure out what to do.
Sure, trying to figure out where to go. And boy, I get lost in Boston myself. So,
right.
And there's nothing wrong with my English speaking. So people thought it was a transformer at first. You're right. That gets to that nobody expected anything like this would happen. How are you feeling today about this, Matt? What's going through your mind there?
I'm feeling okay. I'm not really in shock. I'm more angry that they would take, you know, their political views out on something so extraordinary. You know, people work so long and work so hard to complete a marathon like this, and, you know, needlessly it's taken away from them. my wife was pretty concerned. She's actually still pretty shook up. The people that I work with, there were 9 of us down there at the time in different areas, but everybody here is pretty shook up, okay, but pretty shook up and wondering why. But overall, I think we'll press on and we'll do all right.
All right. Matt, thanks a lot for being with us.
Sure. Thank you.
That's Matt Fowler. Again, he's a Northwood resident, pretty close to the scene of the first explosion. He works for AMI Graphics, which supplies all of the signs for the marathon. We're following up on this story, and we want your reaction. 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. And Keith Shields and Caesar, him expressing some of the same things that you expressed, Keith, you know, just an anger. How dare you take something that's so beautiful and so pure and impose your political views on it. So,
well, you know, and what he was talking about, the woman pushing the wheelchair, I actually kind of know that story. It's there's a father and son that's a legend. In fact, they just erected a statue on Dick and Rick Hoyt. Rick has been in a wheelchair, all of his life. Dick, his father, pushes him every year. They become an institution in the Boston Marathon. This was the first mother-daughter who's ever ran the Boston Marathon, a mother pushing a daughter in the wheelchair. I had read their story. She had trained all winter piling rocks in the wheelchair and running around to prepare for the event. I ran past them and knew their story. And this is what the Boston Marathon's about. You know, yeah, we're all kind of in competition, but it's such a supportive thing. So you run by these people and you just say, you know, you are doing such a great job. Keep going. So I ran by those people And when I had heard that at the finish line that they came so close to getting hurt, I mean, it just, you know, tore my heart out. You know, again, really, how could this happen? You know, and the confusion that happens, too, you know, it's the last thing you're thinking about. You're just really thinking about, you know, how can I just walk forward? My legs are sore, you know, and feeling a lot of pride.
Yeah, and that's what Matt mentioned, too. He said, you know, a lot of runners, maybe it was Steve Brown, a lot of runners were kind of confused. They were done with the race. You know, you've gone 25 miles, 25 and a half miles. You're not really in a state to understand what's happening.
Well, that's true. And it's just, you know, pandemonium. I mean, and people are cold and people are tired. I mean, I can tell you, your head's not working completely
right
after 26 miles. You know, you just, even when you're talking, you're a little more labored when you're talking. You don't sort of figure things out. I mean, your body is basically pushing you to that finish line. And it's a miracle what the body can do. And to get to there, then it's a time where, you know, your body and your mind start shutting that down a little. And to now actually have to start that up again is very tough. And, you know, people couldn't get into their hotels. You know, people couldn't, you know, find loved ones. And, you know, I had heard about people who had to, you know, offer up their places for other people and you know, and find a way to get out to those houses.
Yeah. Cesar, to you, one thing that I thought was interesting from yesterday, people were taking pictures with their iPhones and so forth to get their loved ones coming across the finish line, like Keith and like the others, and that there are so many pictures now that people took. Police are asking folks, hey, we might want to use those as possible clues to help us solve this.
Yeah, absolutely. A couple of points about that. One is that while in the United States, if you look at whether it's international or domestic incidents of terrorism over the past several decades, as I mentioned before, overall the number of incidents is generally on a sort of a decline overall. However, one of the things that also ties to a point you made earlier about the sort of why and people get so fearful is that the lethality, as you can imagine with today's technology, of terrorism has increased in that same time period. So there might be fewer attacks, but those attacks that do take place
are more deadly,
and can kill more people and hurt more people. At the same time, one of the flip sides of that is that one hopes that we can maybe marshal some of that same sort of modern technology to try and figure out what it was that happened and maybe see if, you know, somebody might have been filming, you know, their friends, their loved ones, and maybe they got something in the background that might be useful to the authorities either at the local or federal level. So certainly one thing that I would encourage people to do is take a look back and see if maybe they snapped some pictures or maybe they took some video that, unbeknownst to them at the time, had something of value for the authorities in it. So I would say
even before the marathon started.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Maybe there's something suspicious in those pictures.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, one small lead might be very useful to the authorities. And, you know, the more people are trying to help out, the better off we'll probably be.
Yeah, although I can also imagine authorities getting inundated with, you know, here's my picture, here's my picture, here's my picture.
That's absolutely true. And from what I've seen thus far in the first 24 hours or so of this, I think the authorities really welcome that from what I've seen, because they'd rather have more information rather than less.
So yeah, because it's right now there's so much that we don't know.
Yeah.
Any bit is going to be helpful.
Absolutely. And if they really need to sort of triage their concerns and take care of certain things as a priority, then I think they'll do that and then come back to, you know, other issues like this potential evidence that maybe people caught electronically.
You know, something else you said, Cesar, I want to follow up on. You said, although the number of terrorism incidents is down, the incidents that we do have are more deadly. There's a lot of talk today about how simple these bombs were and what that might indicate.
Absolutely. I mean, there are a lot of different types of weapons that people can make today. And the unfortunate reality is that a lot of them don't really take a whole lot of knowledge and don't really take a whole lot in the way of sophisticated parts. You can, unfortunately, acquire a lot of these parts for these components for these devices locally pretty easily. And, you know, technology comes into play again insofar as there are plenty of directions that, you know, people can find on the internet, and without too much trouble, they can put together relatively simple bombs pretty easily.
So the idea that I've heard this morning is, okay, maybe it wasn't some sophisticated Al-Qaeda terrorist network. It's just...
It may not have been. It,
yeah.
It is. I mean, it could have been, but again, you know, it's sort of early. We don't really know. But it wouldn't surprise me, I guess I'd phrase it that way, if it were somebody who just happened to, you know, be upset, somebody who wanted maybe attention, even though it's ironically sort of an anonymous attention at this point, but wanted to express their anger about who knows what political issue, or just express their anger generally. They pretty easily could have acquired these parts, put together something fairly easily, unfortunately.
Keith.
Well, you know, and some of the things that you also heard is that, I mean, where it happened at the finish line, there are blocks from the finish line. You know, it is a place where all the cameras are. You know, it is a place where, you know, it's 26 miles. You could have done this anywhere, but sort of at a place not only where there was a lot of people, but where it's going to be seen by a lot of people. That could have been the reason why. It could have not been the reason why. It was the location. As Caesar says, you know, this is all speculation at this point in time. But, you know, ever since, you know, I've run a lot of marathons. I've run 29. And, you know, ever since you started hearing more and more about terrorist acts, I always thought about the marathon. You know, if you ever watch the beginning of the New York City Marathon and you see 30,000 people running over the different parts of the Verrazano Narrows Bridge, you thought, I literally would think to myself at times, oh my God, imagine something happened there. That would just be horrific. And so, you know, I always thought that too about the Boston Marathon. It's a place that it's impossible almost to enforce, and yet would be a place where there's a lot of people if someone wanted to do something as horrible as that.
Well, and I do wonder about that. I'm glad you raised that, because, sure, since 9/11, we've all been a little bit more aware, or a lot more aware of, gee, there's a lot of people here, and gee, they're vulnerable. So what's the security usually like, Keith, at the finish line or around the marathon?
It's almost non-existent. I mean, it's really just about the runner's welfare. I might have to talk about this after the break, but I mean, how do you enforce that in the future? I mean, how do you not have that happen again? I mean, this is run through the city of Boston, through a lot of residential neighborhoods, cross street after cross street. You know, I can't imagine. You know, just think about President Obama in Concord last year and how much you had to work to enforce just that little tiny place in Concord. Now, do that for 26 miles. This isn't the Super Bowl where you just have to, you know, just bar off certain entrances so no one gets in. There's countless number of entrances. How do you ensure that somebody, you know, you can't just let every single person in through a security check? It seems almost impossible to me.
Yeah. And Caesar, I want your thoughts on that too after a break. And we're also going to hear from another person who ran the marathon yesterday and is still feeling pretty shaken up from the Granite State. Our phone number for you to join us with your reactions, your thoughts, your questions and comments is 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Email exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page, and we're taking your reactions and thoughts to these bombings at the Boston Marathon yesterday. 1-800-892-6477.
This is NHPR, where support comes from you, our members, and from R.H. Thaxton & Company, realtors serving the real estate needs of the Monadnock region, New Hampshire, northern Massachusetts, and southeastern Vermont. Information at Thaxton.com. And from Hypertherm, an associate-owned manufacturer of metal cutting equipment made in New Hampshire and sold worldwide. Hypertherm.com. Good morning. It's 9:40. This is NHPR.
I'm Laura Kanoy. Join me and a panel of reporters, editors, and analysts for the Friday New Hampshire News Roundup.
I think the House Democratic Caucus is going to determine whether casino gambling
goes through. And they've created a supercommittee of the House Finance and House Ways and Means Committees to do it as a joint.
14 states now have some sort of a home grow provision in their laws, including, of course, Vermont.
We'll talk through the big Granite State stories of the week. The Friday New Hampshire News Roundup, Friday mornings at 9 on The Exchange from NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're getting Granite State reaction to yesterday's Boston Marathon bombings. And, of course, we want to hear from you, 1-800-892-6477. Especially if you were at the race yesterday, if you're a runner or were down there to support somebody who ran, let's hear from you. Also, just your broad comments and thoughts after this. Our number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Our guests are Keith Shields, executive producer for The Exchange. He was running his 16th marathon yesterday, finishing up about an hour and a half before the bombs went off. Also here is Cesar Rebellon, criminologist, associate professor of sociology at UNH, who teaches a course on terrorism. And gentlemen, before we go to our listeners, Cesar, just following up, please, on what Keith said, you can't secure these events. They're too huge.
You can. I mean, that's absolutely correct. And, you know, we live in a free society, and I think, you know, the vast majority of us like it that way. And, you know, we don't want to be deterred from living our lives. So given that reality, there unfortunately is not going to be any way to prevent any of this from taking place. And again, I know that that's unfortunate, and a lot of people oftentimes after something like this, particularly given that it is, relatively speaking, compared to a lot of other countries, a rare thing in the United States, a lot of people, you know, get very scared, want to know what is it that I can do or we can do to completely eliminate this threat, to make sure that this, quote, never happens again.
Yeah.
And the unfortunate reality, again, is that that's probably not going to be possible. The best that you can do is you can, you know, when it's appropriate, continue, you know, living your life. Hopefully we'll have another Boston Marathon, and yes, it will be scarred by this, but, you know, we continue the year after that, the year after that, and the year after that. The other thing that you can do is, you know, with investigation, you can try to prevent situations like this from ending with a lot of death and harm physically to people, emotionally to people. And there have been examples of that where the FBI has maybe infiltrated a group. I think there was a situation a couple years back in Oregon, in Portland, where an individual wanted to detonate a bomb and ended up getting in touch with people that he didn't realize were the FBI, and the FBI prevented that from taking place. So there are going to be some situations where we're able to defend against these types of attacks. But again, the unfortunate reality is that we're probably not going to be able to eliminate all of them.
Well, and there have been, that's the good news, is there have been several thwarted
Absolutely.
Attacks recently, one in Times Square and so forth. I want to bring another voice into our conversation, gentlemen. Joining us now from Manchester is Joyce. She's an alderman there. And as I understand, Joyce, your husband was running in the marathon yesterday. Is that right?
Yes, we both were.
You both were running. Okay. Well, we're glad you're safe. Can you tell us where and when you were when this happened, please?
Sure. I had finished about 20 minutes before the bombs went off. And when you finish Boston, you're on Boylston Street, and it takes quite a bit of time to get to the end in terms of, you know, you get your bags and all of that. So I was on Boylston and Arlington when I heard the big boom, and I thought it was a celebratory cannon of some sort. But then when the crowd and I looked back, it was pretty obvious that it wasn't. We saw all of this smoke, and then a few seconds later, another large boom and more smoke. And the crowd that I was in just started to move very quickly forward. My husband had finished probably about 45 minutes or more before, so I knew he was out of the area. We have a designated place where we meet. But it was just very frightening.
Yeah, it's awful. And I'm glad you and your husband made it safe. So at the time, you thought it was a celebratory cannon. Somebody else earlier this hour thought it was at first a transformer blowing up, but then pretty quickly you realized, no, something is really wrong here.
Exactly. I mean, it just was so hard to comprehend, and it still is today, because it's a Boston Marathon, and, you know, just there are so many people participating and so many people there, and, you know, we're all so proud of this event. And to even imagine that something terrible happened it's hard to comprehend.
Yeah, and you work so hard to get to this day, as Keith Shields was saying earlier.
Sure.
It's a big one. Yes. Joyce, final thoughts from you. And again, I'm glad you and your husband made it safe.
Thank you. Our thoughts are just with the people who were injured in this event. Our prayers and thoughts are with them, and just hope for the best.
Yeah. All right. Joyce, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Joyce Craig again. She's a Manchester alderman. She and her husband, as she told us, were there yesterday, both running the Boston Marathon. The number for you to join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Here's an email from Jerry who says, I have concerns that the news reports of the bomb being an unsophisticated device is not supported by the bomb's effect. The many reports of the loss of legs and ankles to me says it was some type of directional explosive device similar to a military Claymore. you know, Jerry, it's a good point. People say it's unsophisticated. That doesn't mean, Caesar, that it wasn't, you know, deadly and devastating. He's right.
It doesn't. But again, you know, that's speaking to the point that I think we discussed earlier, that I would kind of let the authorities do their job, help where you can, and they will put together the evidence that is available and hopefully figure out as much as they can to try and maximize our chances of getting whoever did this.
Yeah, and again, in terms of the authorities, I think Caesar mentioned earlier Keith Shields, but I'd love your thoughts too. Medical personnel, emergency personnel, they're ready for this thing. And it just, you know, it warms your heart and breaks your heart at the same time to hear that the minute something happened, these folks jumped to the scene.
Well, they're ready for this thing, but they're mostly, the thing that they're ready for is the runner who collapses at the finish line, who might have a heart attack, who can't stand anymore, who might be dehydrated or hyperneurotic or you know, have salt issues as well. I'm sure that most of them weren't even thinking about this. But, yeah, you watch the tapes and you see that immediately, you know, they jump into it. There's a famous guy. His name is Tommy Marr. He's the guy who kind of coordinates the finish line. He's the guy who kind of greets the elites when they first cross, that make sure that the place is clean, clear of anybody getting in the way. You know, you're not a real runner unless you've been yelled at once by Tommy Marr for being in the way. I've been yelled at him. But he immediately, you see him turn and jump and run right into the fray of things. So many, you know, unspoken heroes of that day.
Yeah, I mean, because another bomb could have gone off and another one, and these folks just jumped right in.
They did. So it's, yeah, it's heroic.
Yeah. Let's take another call. This is Mary in Concord. Hi, Mary. Thanks for waiting. You're on The Exchange. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you.
Sure.
I guess as I'm listening to all this, I'm just so concerned, and I know there isn't an answer for it, that these things that are happening, be it the bombs yesterday or the school shooting, that somehow the media, I know we need to know this information that's going on, but somehow it gets the people to get what they want. They seem to want attention. And again, I know there's no way to get around that, you know, we need to know what happens in the world, but it's so frustrating that somebody can do something and obviously they're not even claiming that they're doing it, but they get all this attention, and it seems to me that that's probably was the motivation, was, you know, just to get the attention. And it's just so sad that, you know, people are hurt, and it's just, you know, they kind of get that feedback, like negative attention instead of a no attention at all.
Yeah.
And they didn't know, you know, like if they're, any thoughts? I mean, my initial reaction when I first heard it was actually, you know, it had come on very quickly after it had happened, and the initial reports were it was a bomb here and a bomb there, and not to diminish the size of it. But for some reason in my mind, I didn't go to a type of a political type of thing because I thought it would be probably like a larger type of thing if it was a political type of terrorism. My mind kind of went to, oh, I don't know, like somebody that trained all year and you know, had some type of an issue and wasn't allowed to go in, and they got angry.
Mary,
that type of thing.
Yeah, I'm so glad you called, because picking up on her point, Caesar, we heard a lot about this after the Newtown shootings too. People expressing frustration that, yes, I know you and the media need to cover it, but could you stop giving this, you know, dreadful shooter all this attention? He doesn't deserve it. He's an evil human being or whatever. Same thing to Mary's point, Caesar. Love your thoughts. You know, the people or person that did this wants attention, and here we are all giving it to him or her.
I think the point
it's
is
very
really,
frustrating.
It is. And I think the point is very, very well taken. That's definitely something that in all likelihood this person or this group did want. And in the vast majority of the situations, the target, in some sense, is not actually the people who got hurt by this, although it's tragic what happened. The target, in many instances like this, is the general public. And one of the things that, whether it's from some sort of goal-oriented perspective, like we want some sort of policy change or I want some sort of policy change politically, or whether it's more expressive, I'm angry about something that has happened to me and I'm going to express that and, you know, see the media cover this and in some sense exact some sort of revenge for something that I've experienced, you know, the college point is absolutely on target. that it's a difficult thing to deal with precisely because of that. How much attention should we be giving this individual or this group? Because there's a good chance that that's one of the things that they definitely want.
Yeah, no, it's a great point, Mary. So thanks for raising it. Keith, did you want to jump in there?
Well, right. And, you know, I think the number one question that's coming out of this today is why? You know, is why would someone do this? Why is this? Why did this happen? You know, and that's the only way to figure out why. You know, we had obviously another show scheduled today, and we just kind of definitely said there's no way we could do a show about taxes on a day like this. So, you know, there is this balance where, I mean, I think there's a lot of people who want to know what would motivate. I never even thought about the idea of someone who didn't get in the race. You know, as Caesar said, it could be a million different reasons at this
sure.
point in time. You know, I want to know why that someone would harm something that I take so dearly. Why the Boston Marathon?
Yeah. And looking ahead, guys, lots of word this morning that other cities will be beefing up their security. Caesar, New York City's Times Square, always a potential target. Talk about how other cities, other landmarks react to this.
Well, understandably, you might want to be prepared in the event that something similar happens. I mean, heaven forbid. You know, one of the things that I talked a little bit about in class yesterday as this was sort of unfolding was heaven forbid that we start seeing similar things throughout the nation. Then we would have, not that this was not a tragic situation, it absolutely was, but then we would have an even more massive problem on our hands. You have to certainly be prepared for that. But again, in a free society, you know, there is only going to be so much that we can do. So it's difficult to find that balance. It is difficult. And I don't have a good answer, unfortunately, as to exactly how much security should be or should not be beefed up, because certainly that's going to take a lot of resources, a lot of people's time and so forth. So finding that balance is a tricky thing, very
yeah.
difficult.
And, you know, that's for security experts, for me and for Keith and for the average person. You know, there's nothing really that you can do. You don't want to stay in your house all day long. I mean, you still need to get out.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, in some sense, that might be what whoever did this wants, is for us to be diverted from, you know, our typical schedule, and for us to be fearful, for us to remain in shock and not do the things that we normally would do. So, again, it certainly makes it difficult to figure out, all right, well, you know, how much should I react to this? How much should I try and go about, you know, my day as best I can? Even though this did happen.
Yeah, and Keith, a lot of talk this morning on London's marathon coming up in a week or so.
Right, that's next Sunday. It's a course where the world record has been set before. So it is another huge race that a lot of people run because the course is relatively easy. They can run a good time. Attracts lots of people.
Beautiful city.
Yeah, there's marathons every weekend, and you know there's large ones in Europe for the rest of the spring and summer. There's obviously New York City you know, there's the Marine Corps one in D.C. in October, New York City in November. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how these races react to what happened yesterday.
Yeah, what do you think, Keith? I mean, again, you can't really secure them, but there'll probably be a little bit more attempt to cordon off spectators or something like that.
Well, right. And, you know, just even in Boston, I mean, you know, just getting to the starting line, there's a million ways you can do it. You can get on one of the actual buses. My running club charters a bus. We drive out there and we get to hang out there the whole time. I don't see police officers kind of hanging out at the YMCA where we board the bus, you know, checking everybody. You know, you can park off the highway and take a shuttle bus in if you're a spectator to watch the start. You know, I'm sure that there's ways that you can make it safer, but you can't make it completely safe. I at least I don't see how you could.
Here's something that came out of that news conference that Steve Brown at WBUR earlier told us there was a 9:30 briefing by authorities in Massachusetts. So I'll just share this with you. Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick says no unexploded bombs were found at the Boston Marathon. He says the only explosives were the ones that went off Monday. Three people were killed, including an 8-year-old boy, and more than 150 injured by two explosions just seconds apart near the finish line Monday. Special Agent in Charge Richard Deloriers says there are no known additional threats. Agents are following a number of leads. Also from the Associated Press, authorities in Massachusetts are asking people to send in any media of the scene that they might have. That's following up on something that you said also earlier, Caesar, that, you know, right now more is good, even if they get inundated with cell phone pictures and so
Absolutely.
Forth. Yeah. So final thoughts from you, Caesar. Again, someone who's a criminologist, you teach a course on terrorism. Where do we go from here? How do we add this to our unfortunate repertoire of understanding of terrorism?
I guess the best thing I could say is I would end where we started, which is give the authorities a little bit of space to do what they do, help where you can help. And, you know, the media, for example, is one example where you can. But give them the space to do what they do. And, you know, unfortunately, I think there's a desire for people oftentimes to have some answer as to, again, we've talked about this throughout the hour. Why did this happen? How can we definitively prevent this from happening again? And the unfortunate answer, I think, is that, you know, there's only going to be so much that you can do. And then I guess another final thought is concerning the issue of what other cities do to prepare for the possibility of, you know, in the event, and I want to emphasize that we don't know at this point whether it was domestic, whether it was international.
Whether it's one incident, whether it's a chain of incidents.
Right. Yeah. But there is a potential, while on the one hand it could be somebody who was just expressing their frustration, expressing their anger, somebody who wanted attention, some sort of what they, you know, call lone wolf and so forth. If it were a group, then one of the things we need to be careful about is really running ourselves ragged with resources and time all over the country, because in some sense that might be something that if it were a group, hypothetically, they might want to see us do. So we have to find that balance between being secure, but also going about our day-to-day lives, given the unfortunate reality that, you know, we cannot completely prevent these things from happening.
That's tough. And Keith, real quick, will you run Boston again next year?
Absolutely. I have a qualifying time. I'll be there. You know, marathoners are the most resilient people you meet. We train all winter in the snow, ice. You know, there's nothing that's going to keep us away from the starting line next year.
All right. Well, glad you're safe. All right, that's Keith Shields, again, executive producer here at NHPR. Ran his 16th marathon yesterday. Cesar Rebellion, really good to meet you. Thank you for your time.
Absolutely.
Cesar Rebellion, criminologist, associate professor at UNH, who teaches a course on terrorism. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. Our executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoy.